This is the third installment of Flamenco Today,
a series of podcasts created by Margaret Hova
and José Luis Greco, which are associated with the Spanish Dance and Flamenco Choreography Competition and are available on our website, certamenflamenco.com.
And on my YouTube channel, as well as other podcast platforms.
Our idea is to interview renowned and upcoming performers and choreographers,
as well as musicians and composers of the Spanish dance world.
For this installment, we had the opportunity of interviewing Olga Pericet and Jesús Carmona, both whom we'd seen perform in the Flamenco Festival of Jerez earlier this year. We were able to interview Olga at the Villa Marta Theater. Olga, tell us about your beginnings, your early artistic training, your teachers, your influences.
Quería evolucionar, que quería otras cosas. Y es curioso porque, bueno,
it's curious, but I've never really let this be known. But in reality, I went in search of classical ballet and Spanish dance because I had flat feet as a child. And the doctor told me that to cure that, I should put on slippers and study ballet. So I went in search of ballet classes. And when I started, I thought, wow, I really like this. It's difficult. I don't know exactly what this is all about, but I really like it a lot. And that's when I found Maica Moyano, another of the great teachers of Córdoba, who has done so much for the dance, and who was in contact with important choreographers and teachers of the moment, like José Granero, Pedro Azorín, Juanjo Linares, teachers of traditional folklore dances. So I was lucky to have found a teacher who put me in touch with other teachers. From there, I went to Sevilla, where I studied with Manolo Marín, who also turned out to be very important for my career. Later, with Cristóbal Reyes in Madrid. My training, we could say, if we compared it to language, my training is bilingual.
Al lenguaje, podríamos decir bilingüe. Mientras que hacía un ballet clásico como base. Pues a ver, la influencia de mi estilo actual es realmente todos los maestros que antes hemos mencionado, más todas
Well, let's see. The influences in my present style, besides all the teachers that I've mentioned before, and all the companies in which I've worked, as well as all that I've absorbed along the way, in my work there is also the influence of painting, visual arts. And even when I start with a project, I may not consciously understand what it's all about, but I do my research in a disciplined way in order to see how far I can go. Recently, I participated in a work that I wouldn't know how to categorize if I had to describe it. Above all, I think, because I'm in a period of reflection and trying to better define my identity. And I'm beginning to realize that since I created my first piece for the choreography competition in Madrid, including La Leona, which is the work I'm presenting here in Jerez this Sunday, I've always combined styles, but combining them from a perspective of purity or contaminated purity, but never arriving at a form or something that could be classified, nor a formula that's always the same.
Forma para clasificarlo, ni una fórmula siempre igual.
Thank you.
Olga, what about your creative process now as a mature artist? On levels of the body and staging, what I'm always trying to find in the body and its movement. In my work, there's always going to be an element of Spanish dance, you might say flamenco. My point of departure as a creator is always flamenco, because it's a need, and that's the way I feel now. I mean, I'm a Spanish dancer. So each time I create a work, there's always at least a touch, a color, a fragment in which is blended our folkloric dances. Or maybe there's a passage of Escuela Bolera, or a moment that I'm lying on the floor, more connected to my contemporary dance identity and form. And all that is in dialogue with, is combined with a flamenco, which you can see in its form on occasion, depending on the evolution of the piece. Sometimes there's more of a mixture, sometimes it's more pure. That is to say, in its more classic form.
En su forma más clásica, por entendernos.
Toma que toma. Ole, cordobesa. Ole, ole, ole.
Entonces, a la hora de construcción del espectáculo, no puedo decir.
So when constructing the piece, I'm not able to say that it's going to be a work of contemporary flamenco, because when you say to people contemporary flamenco, they already have a preconceived idea of what that is. But a color, a form, something stipulated which have defined certain artists, but with which I don't feel identified. I feel my work is something else, although I am a contemporary flamenco dancer, and I always include the visual arts and music, which somehow adds another level. I like that. Contagious. Where different styles and disciplines of Spanish dance are in communication with each other and can be perceived in all their purity. I don't feel a rejection towards that term at all. And there could just as well be traditional flamenco. Everything can be combined. There's no set formula. Maybe it's work that defies expectations. I really don't know how to define myself. Maybe you could call my work modern flamenco. Could be.
Mi creación es un flamenco moderno. Puede ser.
Can we talk a little bit about your creative process with musicians and composers?
En el caso de la música, para mí es muy importante y sí que necesito empezar a por ella.
Regarding music, it is indeed important for me, and I have to start there. Of course, in flamenco, music tells, it's our guide. It's not like when you see a work more in the contemporary dance line where the music is perhaps the climax or is more of a supportive element, like a film's soundtrack, or something intuited according to the context. In flamenco, the music is the text or the synopsis of the work. For instance, in this production, La Leona, the music is 50% of it, because it's about a musical instrument. I'm very careful when choosing musicians, because not all musicians will understand what you want, and above all, because each have their own style. Maybe one plays the guitar more traditionally, another might be more adventurous and play more instruments. Sometimes I need more brass, sometimes more strings, sometimes nothing. And so from the starting point of choosing musics, the pieces I want to use and where I want to go with them, I enter into a serious discussion with myself. I then look for the right musician and tell him or her what I want. But I also give them freedom in certain areas so that they can give me options within the direction I'm going. And that's when the real collaboration starts. Then, on a global level, for the piece as a whole, there are moments that I see things very clearly and make my own music. Or I might say, here, I don't want music. I want something more abstract. And then we're on our way, the two of us in the studio, sometimes knowing where we're going, sometimes not, making mistakes, gradually going from one point to the next. But in all my works, I've always kept a tight rein on the musical direction. I've always wanted it to grow alongside the form of the piece as a whole. I've never commissioned a piece of music which I've then choreographed. I find that limiting. I prefer to create it like a work in progress. After all, it's my script.
Mira, si tuviera, también lo siento así porque, claro, no, nuestra danza está unida a la
Our dance is closely united with the music. We dancers are also musicians, besides the fact that we move. If I had to decontextualize and not move while I play the castanets or do footwork, if I stayed in one place, only concentrating on the music, I'm going to be doing the same thing, but in place. And then I'm more at the service of the music. But since the music is part of me and I'm moving, it feels like the music is coming from the movement. But evidently that's just another aspect. There's a connection with the musician that comes from being together.
There's
a moment in La Leona that I have that connection with Alfredo Mesa. There's a moment when I let go, abandon myself, and my castanets respond to his notes. It also happens to me with singers, male or female. I need to have them visually close to me to see how and when they breathe. When they inhale breath, and what I can do in that breath.
¿Cómo respiran? ¿Qué aire coge y qué puedo hacer yo en ese aire?
La camisa.
If we had the opportunity of interviewing Olga in Jerez, we had to wait till we got back to Madrid to talk with Jesús Carmona.
Jesús is also very articulate, and we covered a lot of ground.
Pues, soy Jesús Carmona, artista, creador, bailador, bailarín, danzador, como dice Rocío Molina, que me encanta muchísimo esa expresión.
I'm Jesús Carmona, artist, creator, dancer, Spanish dancer, flamenco dancer, launcher of ideas, as Rocío Molina says. I love that expression. I began in a very natural way when I was 6 or 7 in a club in Barcelona. I was born in Badalona. My parents emigrated there from Córdoba. I'm the youngest of 5 siblings, all boys, and since I was very little, my mom says I was very interested in the dance, in flamenco. Because, by the way, in those years, 1985, 86, on the radio, they played a lot of popular Spanish songs and that type of music. At least at home, that's the kind of radio stations we listened to. And my mom says that as soon as I heard music, I would start getting restless in my crib. So it was actually I that made my parents sign me up for dance classes. I had no concept of what dancing was. I wasn't even an amateur or in touch with the world of flamenco. Nothing. My mom was a homemaker. My father, a beer delivery man, who had no important hobbies because he spent all his time working and bringing us up. So I feel as though flamenco, the dance, chose me, like I had no choice.
Yo lo siento como que, o sea, yo siento que el flamenco me eligió a mí o que la danza me eligió a mí. Lo siento así porque no he tenido elección. Entonces, yo recuerdo desde muy pequeño estar sentado en una silla con un cassette delante, pum, y escuchar música.
So this teacher I had, Sonia Poveda, Miguel Poveda's sister, was a very positive influence. I wasn't even aware of how much she opened my ears. Very often I'll hear a flamenco song, and I won't consciously know what it is, but I know it, and I don't know why. I remember being very small, sitting in a chair with a cassette player in front of me, and I had to listen to music, whether I felt like it or not. Yeah, my mom was very strict and inculcated in us the values of work, discipline, rigor. My brothers, for example, did rhythmic gymnastics, and with them, she was also very strict. So like I said, there I was, sitting on this chair with a cassette player in front of me, and I had to listen to flamenco music for an hour or whatever every day. I danced every day from Monday to Sunday. I remember it as a very natural thing, nothing forced. I enjoyed myself very much. And then I turned 9 and I started at Mabel, a school in Barcelona where they trained young dancers to get into the conservatory. There, I discovered classical dance, escuela bolera, Spanish dance, because up until that time, I'd only danced flamenco. A whole world opened for me, and that's when I decided I wanted to be a professional dancer. I remember very clearly saying to myself at 9 years old, "This is for me."
Y ahí tomé la decisión de que quería ser profesional. O sea, yo recuerdo con 9 años, o sea, así decir, esto es lo que yo quiero ser.
Ay, para apartarme. So Jesús, tell us about the beginnings of your professional life.
En sexto vinieron Carlos Rodríguez.
In the 6th level of conservatory classes, Carlos Rodríguez and Miguel Ángel Rojas came to teach a class. When they saw me, they proposed I join the company because one of the dancers was leaving to perform in a musical. I was 16 or 17 and I was off to Madrid. I went to the Certamen Coreográfico with Esther Carrasco in a piece in which we all were painted green. We were supposed to be flowers. That was the first time I performed in Madrid, in the Albéniz Theater. I was already dancing in the Rojas Rodríguez company, But after 6 months, through some connection or other, I got into Carrasco's company with his performance lined up in which I had a solo. That was my introduction to Madrid. Imagine the choreography certamen in the Albéniz Theater. I was so nervous. With Rojas Rodriguez, we'd been working outside of Madrid, and this was a unique opportunity. Later, I worked with Carmen Cortés, with Guito, with Canales, with Manolete. It was a time I danced with many companies until I joined the Ballet Nacional. I don't remember the year, but I was about 19 or 20.
No me acuerdo. Tuve 20 años.
O sea que solo pasaron 3 o 4 años.
Sí, 3 o 4 años.
Jesús, you have had quite a number of international successes. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
En Nueva York, pues eso, el New York Times me puso...
I don't remember the New York Times headline about me exactly, but it was something to the effect of, "The sensation of flamenco has arrived in New York." They published a very good article also. In New York, I had a very special experience. The other day I was having a drink with a colleague, Cristian García, who's soloist with the Ballet Nacional, or was it Ángel Reyes, who was in my company, and he said to me, "You did a seguirías that was a showstopper, and the audience gave you a 5-minute ovation in the middle of the number." That was in New York. In New York, something unique happened that hasn't happened to me again. I felt an unbelievable connection with the audience. I think it was the best performance I ever did. Like I said, I stopped at one point of the dance, and the audience began to applaud, and it just kept on going more and more. I got all emotional and began to cry. I mean, it was my childhood dream to dance in New York.
O sea, mi sueño era bailar en Nueva York. ¿Sabes? De lo que es la caja escénica. Y claro, de repente verte en el otro lado, estoy bailando aquí donde yo de pequeño veía bailar a la máxima figura de la danza clásica, ¿no?
Y eso, oh, the pre-Benoit. To suddenly see yourself from the other side, dancing, where as a child you've seen dance the most important figures of classical ballet in the Bolshoi Theater in Moscow, it's a very beautiful experience. I had no idea they were going to give me the prize, and I didn't even understand the announcement in Russian. In English I might have, but in Russian, forget it. So they announced it, and the people began to applaud. Because of the Russian accent, I didn't understand it when they said my name, but a Cuban fellow sitting behind me said, "Hey, they've given you the prize."
Dijeron Jesús Carmona, pero yo no me enteré con el acento. Empezó todo el mundo aplaudiendo, qué bien, qué bien. Y el de atrás, que era un chico cubano, me dijo que te lo dieron a ti. Y yo así, ¿cómo? Dice que sí, que sí. Entonces, claro, yo me llevaba a ti. Como que...
There seems to be a tendency nowadays to work in smaller formats, ¿no?
Creo que hemos aprendido a sacarle el máximo partido a una situación económica.
I think we've learned to get the most out of a particular economic situation, since expensive productions are no longer viable because there are budgetary limits to which promoters have absolutely clung to. So it's very difficult to get past those limits and be able to pay a decent salary to a group of musicians, pay for hotels, per diems, traveling expenses. Since it all gets so complicated, we've been obliged to cut back everywhere and make the most of the situation. But I think this also has a positive effect because it encourages collaborations.
Porque da lugar a eso, a que se creen colaboraciones.
And your work with musicians?
Creo que ellos también han entrado en un proceso de entendimiento.
I think they've also begun a process of understanding. For example, in El Salto, which we did in residence in New York's city center, in Miami, London, Sevilla, and Madrid, In all those places, the musicians were there too. They understand that things aren't the way they used to be. When I would ask them for a falsetta, you send it to me and I choreograph a number to it. Rather, I want that you create the music with me now. For what my movement needs, you create the music, and for what your sound world needs, I create the movement. Let it be a conversation.
Que ha pasado es que hay creadores que evolucionan este arte de forma natural y como necesidad.
Well, I think that what's happened is that there are artists who are born to develop this art in a natural way and as a real organic need. That's when you believe in what they're saying. Then there's been a fashion, just as there are fashions on TikTok or Instagram everywhere in everyday life, so there are in the arts. I think there's been a tendency to imitate those creators. So in the end, there have been many artists trying to do things they weren't born to do. That's when they're not convincing. So eventually, those artists have fallen by the wayside, and others have returned to their roots. I think those that evolve are those that are nourished by the past. For example, Juan Requena is a guy who is very proud of his work and doesn't like to lie. He doesn't like to lie as a person and even less as an artist. That seems to me of incalculable worth. To find an artist who doesn't lie to himself or to you, in the end, that creates truths. It creates music that is authentic, and the authentic touches your heart.
Crea música que es verdad. Y que la verdad te toca el corazón.
And tell us a bit about your involvement with Escuela Bolera.
Pues que José Antonio me hizo bailar Puerta de Tierra.
José Antonio had me dance Puerta de Tierra in the Zarzuela Theater. I had never before danced in slippers before an audience.
No bailándolo yo.
I don't dance them myself, but in all my pieces there is a number of Escuela Bolera. The first tablao in Madrid that showed Escuela Bolera was the Villa Rosa Tablao. They had a special week during which a female dancer did Escuela Bolera. But I was the first one to introduce Escuela Bolera in the Corral de la Morería Tablao. It was pretty difficult to convince Blanca del Rey to include Escuela Bolera in her show because she was afraid the tablao audience wouldn't understand it. But the result was just the opposite. The audience appreciates it, enjoys it, and we've given the opportunity to dancers of Escuela Bolera to develop. For Estela, I had mounted Mario Escudero's Ímpetu, which was a piece I'd included in my tours since 2016. We even took it to New York's city center. And the first day I was very nervous when she got up on stage, dressed so beautifully, and the piece began, and the audience were on their feet.
Y el público se puso de pie, el público se rindió. Y yo creo que eso convenció. Bueno, yo acabo de terminar también un encargo, como ha sido el...
I just finished a commission, the choreography for Nacho Cano's musical, Malinche. In the show, there are the Spanish and the Mexicans. Nacho wanted the dancing of the two groups to be differentiated, so the Spanish dance flamenco and Spanish dance, and the Mexicans dance urban styles. So I did the Spanish dance and flamenco parts, but I also collaborated on everything else. The truth is that it was an incredible experience in which I learned a lot.
Your wife, with whom we've had two children, is also a dancer and choreographer. Tell us about that and your latest projects. My wife, Lucia Campillo, made a beautiful and very solid show in which she comes across as a very strong presence. Isamai told me that when she saw the show, she was surprised. It was surely her own fault for not having seen her more, but she didn't imagine that she'd have such a strong presence, nor be so good. The truth is, she did it extraordinarily well, and with a team of mostly women. Having finished the Malinche show, I'm now immersed in a new project with which I'm very excited. It's a continuation of the direction of my last two shows, which has led me, without planning it beforehand, to the idea of creating a triptych. It has to do with questions of masculinity in the 21st century and how we experience it, how I've learned to live with it. These ideas came to me as a result of knowing I had fathered a boy. I started questioning what kind of man I was. I'd lived my whole life without ever asking myself what masculinity meant for me. So I started a very interesting personal process, which made me grow a lot. After the pandemic, I made Danza de Bestias, in which I worked with all those painful emotions and sensations, all those negative experiences that the human being often tends to hide. I wanted to learn to give them a voice and to dance with them.
A mí me apetecía darle voz y aprender a bailar con ella. Entonces, en baile de bestias.
Tiene la forma de mi lamento, vive mi mente, duele mi cuerpo, duele mi cuerpo.
Por ti, te sonreía.
Sí, en estos dos últimos procesos he trabajado con Ferran Carvajal y en este último también.
Yes, in these last two projects, I worked with Ferran Carvajal. And in the present one, I'm working with him also. For example, in El Salto, we had a gender consultant, and for this project, we're working with a psychologist. In other words, in the early creative process, I try to gather as much information as possible to later put on stage something coherent. I don't throw out all the information I've gathered, I make choices, but I need to have a very large range of information and perspectives. I like to discuss, to be challenged. I like to go home angry and ask myself why, and then the next day find the answer. I like to enter into that kind of creative process with a team, which gives me options and makes me think, makes me read and learn and all that.
Que me dé opciones y que me haga pensar y cavilar y leer y aprender y...
Yo me enterré con el monstruo que habita en mi salón. Hablo con él, todos me gritan mi salón. Cuando quieres capaz, yo siempre lo persigo. Lo que te mata es el miedo, el monstruo es inofensivo.
All the musical excerpts heard on this podcast are from the different shows of the artists interviewed.